Good morning. Good to be with you today. You take your Bibles and open to the 11th chapter of the book of Hebrews. We'll take our study from that text this morning. Hebrews chapter 11. If you have a Bible, it'd be good to have it open if we're going to be looking at that text this morning. Our study will be based on verse 10, and Matt just prayed about that. You'll see a phrase there in verse 10. He was looking for the city which has foundations. This is talking about Abraham. He was looking for the city which has foundations. Before we look at verse 10, let's look at Abraham's circumstances as they're presented in the text before us. And to do that, we'll back up to verse 8. Look at verse 8. By faith, Abraham, when he was called, obeyed by going out to a place which he was to receive as an inheritance, and he went out, not knowing where he was going. So, imagine today, say, McKenna, somebody said, let's go, McKenna. You said, where are we going? I don't know. But let's go. What's more, what if they said, not let's just go, get in the car and go. They say, pack up all your belongings. Put as much as you can in whatever you're going to travel with because we're moving. Where to? Don't know. But that's what the text says. Abraham lived in the Ur of the Chaldees. And if archaeology is correct, and what they tell us about the Ur at that time, it was a very civilized place. One of the most highly civilized cities of that time. Where I guess it'd have all the conveniences of the day. And now he's going to leave the Ur, a very civilized place, to go somewhere. And then he goes to Haran. And God doesn't let him stay there. He said, no, this is not the place. He's got to go somewhere else. And remember, at this time when Abraham left Haran, he was not a young man. He was 75 when he left Haran. And the text says he went out to some place. He was to receive as an inheritance. But he did not know where he was going. The next verse says that when he got there, you think, ah, got here, everything's lovely now. Got to the land of Canaan. But by verse 9, it says he lived as an alien in the land of promise. Of course, that would be Canaan. Not a place to settle down and call home. He lived as an alien in the land of promise, as in a foreign land. And it says he was dwelling in tents with Isaac and Jacob. So, I don't know what kind of dwelling he had in the Ur. The indications are that Abraham was evidently a wealthy man. But here he now is going to live in tents in this foreign land as a foreigner. And he did that for about 100 years. He was 75 when he left Haran. He died at 175. So, for 100 years, this man lived as a foreign, as an alien, in this land supposed to be the land of promise. Look down at verse 13. It says, all these died in faith without receiving the promises. What? Didn't God make a promise? I'm going to send you to a land that you're going to receive as an inheritance. 25 years later, you don't have the land. He's 100. 50 years later, at 125, he doesn't have the land. 150. 175, he breathes his last breath. And Acts chapter 7, verse 5, Stephen, in recounting that to a Jewish audience, says he didn't own 1 foot of land, never received 1 foot. All he had was what he bought as a burial place for his wife. How many of us would have retained our faith in God if for 100 years God had said, over actually 100, he left Ur, here, go to this land, this place I'm going to give you for an inheritance. And when you died, you didn't own, God never gave you even a foot of land. And so, what in the world would drive a man to do that? What would drive you to leave El Reno, take off, and sell your house and all your belongings, pack them up in your vehicle or trailer, and take off somewhere because somebody told you to? The answer is in verse 1. Well, it's actually, before I get to verse 1, look at verse 8, verse 9, verse 11, and verse 13. It's right here in the text, then I'm going to look at verse 1. Verse 8, here's the key phrase throughout the whole chapter, chapter 11. By faith. You have it in verse 8. Verse 9, by faith. You have it again in verse 11. By faith, this time talking about Sarah. And then you have it again in verse 13, encompassing all of these that he's talking about. All of these died in faith. Well, what is there about faith that's the motivating factor to do what he did? Go back to verse 1. Now we'll see what it is. Verse 1 says, faith. Now I'm reading the New American Standard. You may be reading a version that reads a little different, but that's of no consequence. Faith is, now the way this version reads, the assurance of things hoped for. Now, some versions read the substance of things hoped for. It's very important to understand he is not saying faith is the objective substance of things hoped for. That is not the objective foundation of things hoped for. This is exactly what your unbelieving friends think about you. You have a faith in heaven. You want to go to heaven. How do you know there's a heaven? Because I believe it. No. That's not how you know there's a heaven. Believing it is not the foundation of the reality of heaven. But the reason I sacrifice to go to heaven, the reason I work to go to heaven, is because faith is the foundation of that hope, the subjective faith I have. Faith is the substance, subjectively, of things hoped for. And so here's this promise God made to Abraham. And it's his faith that undergirded the surety of what he could not see, what was ahead of him, and what had been promised. Faith is the assurance of things hoped for, the conviction of things not seen. He hadn't seen whatever God promised, but he had a strong assurance, so much so that he was willing to sacrifice, to watch out, to focus, to be diligent, to strive to attain what God was promising. Look at verse 6. Here's a key verse for the whole chapter. Now, without faith, it's impossible to please God, for he who comes to God must believe that he is, but that's not enough. You can believe God is and wilt in the face of trial and difficulty. And this whole section, beginning back in chapter 10, verse 32, all the way through chapter 12, is talking about how you can face trials and difficulties. And that's what these readers were facing. And how you can persevere in the face of all of that. And here it is. Not only believing God, but read the rest of the verse. But that he is a rewarder of those who seek him. God keeps his promise. And he'll reward. And when you believe that, it becomes the substance, the conviction of things that you cannot see. That's why Abraham was motivated to go to a place that he had never been, didn't know anything about, lived there for 100 years as an alien and a stranger in a foreign land. Because he believed God keeps his promises and God would reward him. Now you'll have in the verse, note, it says in verse 10, he was looking for a place. You know, when we drove up here make this trip, there were some people we wanted to go see. We weren't sure how to get there. My wife had her GPS on her lap. And she would be, okay, you got to turn right up here at this this particular road, so we'd be looking for that road, trying to find out where it was. And you do that, you're searching for a place. That's not this. There's two other words that are found here in the text that help us out. Notice, if you will, down in verse 14, it says, those who say such things make it clear they're seeking. So you got looking in verse 10, you got seeking in verse 14, and then you have one more verse, and that's verse 16. They desire a better country. He was looking, he was seeking, he was desiring because of his faith that undergirded his hope. And it's that willingness to go through the effort and make the sacrifices that enabled Abraham to do what he did, and all these people in chapter 11 that's being discussed, to face what they did, even to be willing to die for it. So it's not just looking for some place you don't know. It's somewhat like the other day I took my car to the shop for some work, and they had a driver, you know, take me home, and I got to talking to the man. And I could tell he was from another country, and he said, yes, I came here from Vietnam. And he began to tell me a little bit about his experience in Vietnam when the communists took over. He said, I escaped by a boat to another country and then later came to the U.S. So here he gets on a boat, treacherous the sea, that kind of left his family behind. They later joined him. Left his family behind, I guess his home country, his belongings. I don't know how much you can get on a boat with a bunch of other refugees. Put his life in danger. He was looking for a place. That's the kind of looking. He was desiring a better place. That's the kind of thing that's in view here. And that's what's all the way through this chapter. It's the kind of looking, seeking, desiring that a person's willing to put all of their effort, sacrifice, everything to attain. And it's interesting in verse 16. Look at verse 16. You see that word, therefore, based on everything he's talking about in 8 through 16, about Abraham, and then he also mentions Sarah. But look at verse 16. He said, therefore, middle of the verse, wouldn't you love to have this said about you? Therefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God. Now, when in the Bible, God says, I'll be your God, the idea is, I'll be your protector. I'll be your provider. I'll be your rewarder. I'll be the one that guarantees your hope. That's the idea. And God is not ashamed. And that's an understated way to say God is proud to be the one they depend upon for their hope. These kind of people, God is proud to be called their God. And when you have people that are working for heaven and sacrificing this life, sacrificing the things that life offers, being willing to go through difficulties because they believe strongly that there's a city whose builder and architect is God. God, I'm proud to be the one that's going to assure their hope. And that's what's said about these particular people in our text. Now, look again at verse 10. Now, the New American Standard reads, he was looking for the city which has foundations. And I imagine Jeremiah encourages you when you study to compare versions. This is a great text in which to illustrate how that can be valuable. The American Standard Version of 1901 has the little word the, has the foundation. If you're familiar with Young's literal translation, it has the foundation. I went to check to see if that article, the word the, is actually there. It is. And so he was not looking for any city. He was looking for a city that has the foundations. He was looking for permanence. In contrast to, look what it says. He was looking for the city which has foundations. But then it says that he, verse 9, had been dwelling in tents. Dwelling in tents. You know, when Abraham first went to Canaan, he pitched his tent several places. He pitched his tent at Bethel. Then he moved to Egypt and he pitched his tent in Egypt. He moved back to Canaan near Bethel. And then he pitched his tent in Hebron. So he was here and he was here and he was there. He's looking for a place of permanence. The city which has the foundation. Now, note in the text it says this particular city, verse 10, whose architect and builder is God. You see down in verse 16 at the end of the verse, he hath prepared a city for me. Tents made by men, they weather, they tear. You got to replace them. Houses are that way. In the Houston area, you've, I'm sure, read in the news about the flood that came our way in this great storm Harvey. And here people had these houses, you know, $300,000, $400,000, $500,000 houses, $1 million house, made out of brick and so forth. And you think, boy, this is a place to live till I die or whatever, till I get ready to move. This flood came in a few hours, sometimes less than that, everything was gone. Everything was destroyed, covered with water. One lady, a wife knows, her daughter had a house on the river, three stories. And they said, we'll put everything up in the third story. We know there's going to be water. She got back. They found a brick or two of the foundation. Everything else was gone. Gone. That's what men build. Men build cities, sometimes call the cities after their name. 1,000 years later, they dig in the sand to try to find the ruins of that buried city. Abraham doesn't want that. He wants the city that has the foundations, something permanent, something that will not decay, that cannot be destroyed. And that's what Abraham is looking for as he marches on in this faith, this hope that's undergirded by faith. Look again at the text in verse 14. It says, those who say such things, they make it clear that they're seeking a country of their own. A country of their own. Now, that phrase in your Bible, country of their own, actually translates one word. And it's interesting, it was to me when I was studying this, because it comes from the word father. And thus, it's the idea of fatherland. The New King James reflects that in this translation. It says homeland. So we have a term. We talk about someplace that's near and dear to us. We're the land of our fathers. That kind of idea. And usually we associate that with people who are like we are, who share our values, where we can circulate freely in society and feel comfortable and have support and that kind of thing. Here's the problem. Abraham was the father. He's the first man called a Hebrew in the Bible. What's the land of his father? He left the Ur. He left Haran. So there's no father for Abraham to say, oh, this is the land where daddy and granddaddy and all of those. No, there's not that. Remember, Stephen said in his sermon in Acts 7, he received not so much as a foot for an inheritance. And yet, he's looking for a fatherland, a homeland. Well, you'll note in the text, you look in verse 13. Remember, he spends 100 years in this place we call Canaan. He said, did that fulfill that? He's looking for a place, verse 8, he was to receive. Didn't that Canaan fulfill Abraham's hope? Evidently not. Because he never got an inheritance there. And on top of that, when you get to verse 13, now the land promised to the nation was fulfilled, yes. But there's something else in view here. This promise to Abraham that he was looking for the city. And you'll note in verse 13, it says, having confessed that they were strangers and exiles, where? On the earth. Abraham was looking for a city that you couldn't find on your map. It didn't exist on the earth. Folks, sometimes I read commentaries and I read these guys and they say, well, you know, the Old Testament people really didn't understand the concept of heaven. That's kind of a New Testament concept. I don't believe that. I believe Abraham clearly understood heaven. He was looking for the city which has the foundation, whose builder and architect is God. On the earth, he said, I'm just a stranger here. I'm an exile. I'm here for a little while. Isn't it amazing that a man that lived 2,000 years before Jesus Christ had that kind of faith, that kind of concept, that kind of hope that was built on God as the rewarder of man? No wonder he's called Father of the Faithful. And yet, that's the idea that we're reading about right here in our text. So, he's looking for a country of his own. So, you think about heaven. Who's going to be there? You go through this chapter, you see the kind of people that will be there. Back in verse 4, he talks about a man even before Abraham called Abel, who offered a blood sacrifice. Abel understood something about sin and atonement. And his brother killed him. But Abel was not a man of the world like Cain. And when Abraham gets there, there'll be Abel. He's like him. He understands. You know, Abraham was justified by faith, and he's held out as that example in Romans chapter 4. Well, Abel can appreciate that. That's the kind of people will be in his homeland. He's going to, you read about in verse 7 about this man named Noah. Here's a fellow that said, was told there's a flood coming. He's going to destroy the earth and everything on it, and you are to build a boat. And he preached and preached and preached and preached, and he only able to influence, so far as we know at least, at the time of the flood, seven other people, his own family. Man, what faith. Wouldn't it be great to mix and mingle with Noah? Abraham looking for that kind of homeland, where there'll be men like Abel, men like Noah. You go down to verse 21, you read about Jacob. And your verse 22, you read about Joseph. What a person, this Joseph, for example. Here at 17. How old are you, Brian? 14. Imagine 3 more years. You got some siblings? Imagine 3 years, they say, we don't like Brian, we're going to set him. We can get him out of here. That's what they did to him. Got rid of him. 22 years. Past. He never heard from his daddy, never heard from his brother. Where's God? But if you read Genesis, we're assured. For example, in chapter 39, he refused to commit sin with Pharaoh's wife, and he was thrown in jail. Over and over, the writer says, the Lord was with him. The Lord was with him. The Lord was with him. 22 years passed. Finally, his brother showed up. Then his dad came. He still is serving God. Joseph's going to be in this city that Abraham's looking for. That's the kind of people that Abraham will be glad to mix and mingle with. Look down in our text again. In verse 24, by faith Moses, when he had grown up, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter. Man, a prince. A prince. Imagine what kind of chariot he could have. He could have the latest chariot with the finest colors. Pass it all up. He could have all the women he wanted. He could have all the wealth he wanted. He could live in a palace. No. Is he the man crazy? No. He's driven by the same faith Abraham had. The same kind of hope that Abraham had. And he says, choosing rather to endure ill treatment with the people of God than to enjoy the passing pleasures of sin. So here's that looking, seeking, desire. To imagine when you're 80 years old, to be called to lead this nation in what seems incredible odds. You're going to go to Pharaoh and tell him to let these people go, yeah? Most powerful empire on the earth. And you're going to lead him through a wilderness. How are you going to feed the kids? How are you going to take care of the animals? How are you going to protect yourself from a cat? God said, I'm going to lead you to the promised land. You've got to have faith that undergirds that kind of hope. And so here's Moses, and it says, note, verse 26. But Moses, just like Abraham, had some pretty good eyesight. He could see beyond Canaan, just like Abraham. And it says in verse 26, considering the reproach of Christ greater riches than the treasures of Egypt. Look at the last of the verse. He was looking to the reward. Tell me Moses didn't understand something about heaven. He wasn't even allowed to go into the land of promise, was he? And yet he was looking to the reward. Never gave up his faith in God. I'm going to tell you what, they were looking for a homeland where there'd be people like them that they could share with. Then you get over to the New Testament. I wish I could shake hands with men like John the Baptist. Strong, bold preacher. Unashamed and unafraid. Of course, he lost his head over it, didn't he? But he showed no faith. You go to a homeland, there'll be men like John the Baptist who'll stand. They're not tossed by the wind, Jesus said. You have people like the woman Mary, a virgin, in a wicked city, kept herself a virgin. And then the angel appears and says, you're going to have a child. Wait a minute. People are going to talk. This is going to be difficult. No, you're going to have a child. What does she do? She goes, praises God for using her as his handmaid. Well, would you like to meet a woman like that? She's going to be in the homeland. She's going to be in the city that Abraham was looking for. There's Stephen who died because he was preaching the truth. And yet, pray, forgive them. They don't know what they're doing. There's men like Paul, one of the most amazing men you read about in the entire Bible, who gave his life to the service of Christ. He probably obeyed the gospel when he was in his 30s. We're not sure about that. And likely died when he was in his late 60s, somewhere in that area. 30 years suffering, traveling about, put in prison, beaten, maligned. But when he died, he said, that's okay. There's a crown laid up for me, a crown of life laid up for me. He knew he wasn't going to get out of prison. No fear. You know why? He was looking for the city that has the foundations. And Abraham was looking to be part of that. He was looking to heaven, if I understand the text. That's what heaven's going to be like. It's going to be those kind of people. Wouldn't it be wonderful to spend eternity with those kind of people? That's what Abraham was looking for. Now, you'll note in verse 16, it says, they desire a better. And you know the word country is in italics. And you know when the italics are in your Bible, it means it's not there. The translators have added it, so just be aware of that. In our modern literature, you young people in our audience, you go to school and you got a textbook and the words are italicized. What does it mean? It means it's emphasized. But that's not true in the Bible. It's just the opposite. It means it's not there. And these translations, like the New American, the American Standard, the King James, the New King James, they italicize those words. Unfortunately, some of the modern translations do not italicize the words. Like the version that's becoming very popular, the English Standard Version, and some preachers are using it. It's okay, I'm just telling you that. They add words and they don't tell you that because they're not italicized. You better compare versions. Anyway, that's kind of a side point, not free. But anyway, that's an important thing to be aware of. Look, it says in verse 16, they desire a better what? Look at the end of the verse, city. He prepared a city. So whether you want to use the word country, which he does use the word country, and in the text back in verse 14, seeking a country of their own, whether you use the word country or city is not critical. It's a place where there are people that make you feel like you're at home, where there's not all the struggles and trials and disbelief and the opposition of sinners. That's what they're looking for. Now verse 16, note it says, he was desiring a better country, that is a heavenly one. Jerusalem was an illustrious city to the Jews. God chose to, quote unquote, put his name there. In other words, this is the place that would be the center of their worship and the center of their government. It became a very, very important city to the Jews. And so when it was destroyed by the Chaldeans in 587, 586, somewhere along in there. Of course, that was a devastating destruction. And then later in AD 70, when it was destroyed by the Roman army, it was really the end of the Jewish nation, as the Bible talks about it. People talk about the Jewish nation today. There can be no Jewish nation today like in the Bible. because you had to have a priesthood, and to be a priest, you had to trace your lineage, and all those records were destroyed in AD 70, so you can't have a priesthood without a proof of lineage. There cannot be a Jewish nation like there once was, because the temple was destroyed, one in Jerusalem. And so here's this illustrious city that they, so much of their hope and their pride was tied to. But Abraham's not looking for that. Of course, when Abraham lived, Jerusalem, as that focus, wasn't even there yet. He's about 2000 B.C. And of course, you know, David is the one that conquered the city. David lived about 1,000 years later. But that's not the point. Look, it says, verse 16, it says, a heavenly one, heavenly city. The idea of a heavenly Jerusalem, a heavenly city that represented God's dwelling with his people and his rule over them, was a common Jewish concept. Remember, this letter was written to Hebrews. So they had this background. Look over, just hold your finger here and go to chapter 12 and look at verse 22. You have come to Mount Zion. These people, I don't know if they've ever been to the peninsula of Sinai, to that area, or to Canaan land itself, or Zion was. But he said, you've come to Mount Zion. He's not obviously talking about some place on a map geographically, but it's a comparison to that. To Mount Zion and to the city of the living God, the heavenly Jerusalem. Heavenly Jerusalem. And that's in contrast, you see in the text, with the earthly Jerusalem. And it's not just the heavenly city itself, but by extension, the new covenant, the priesthood, and the promises that he discusses throughout the book of Hebrews. All that went with the heavenly Jerusalem. That city connoted so much to these people. Look at chapter 13, verse 14. 13, 14. You know, when you study the Bible, we know, of course, that none of the Bible was written to us. Not one chapter was written to you or me. None of it. It was written for us, but not to us. I'm not a Hebrew. This is written in Hebrew. I don't live in Ephesus. I don't live in Philippi. But I learned from letters written to them. But before I start talking about applications to me, I need to know what it meant to them. And so here is a letter to Hebrew. Jerusalem was a cherished concept. But look at 13, 14. Hey, here we do not have a lasting city. That is Jerusalem, here. And Hebrew probably written pretty close to AD 70 when Jerusalem would be completely destroyed. Here we do not have a lasting city. There's no permanence there. But look at the text. We are seeking. There are cities in italics, but that's the idea, as you see in the first part of the verse. We're seeking the city which is to come. Another city on earth called Jerusalem? The city being rebuilt to its former glory? Never. Never. In spite of what premillennialists say, never. There's one to come. It's that same city Abraham was seeking. Look in Galatians chapter 4. Look in Galatians chapter 4 and verse 26. The Jerusalem above. So there's the earthly Jerusalem. But then there's the Jerusalem above. A literal city. No, that connoted the government of God, the new covenant of grace, all associated with that. And so when you read here in Hebrews chapter 11 about the heavenly city, so we started with that back in verse 10, the city which has foundation. Now he calls it the heavenly one in verse 16. That's what's in view. And I'll tell you what, I continue to come back as I read this chapter. With the fact that here's a man that lived 2,000 years before Christ. Man by the name of Abraham. But he could see beyond the land of Canaan. He could see beyond the 175 years that he would live upon the earth. His faith allowed him to look into the future because of a God who was his rewarder. And he believed it and was willing to sacrifice and give his whole life to it. Now, you know, you look at this text when you get to verse 15 and 16, and what you see is he had a choice. He was a man of free will. Look at verse 15. You've got three words in verse 15 and 16 I want you to know. It's if, but, and therefore. Look at it. Verse 15. If they had been thinking of the country from which they went out, they would have had opportunity to return. Couldn't he have said, I'm tired of this tent life. Gather your goods. We're going back to the earth. He was wealthy. He was able to lead people in war. We know that from the book of Genesis. He could have returned back to the civilized society, maybe got him a nice house. So if he would have been thinking about that, if that would have been a priority to him, if his faith began to weaken and the hope began to be dim, maybe he would say, I've had enough of this. This is long enough. They had a choice. But, verse 16, there's the but, as it is, they desire. Remember that looking, seeking, desire. They desire a better country, that is, a heavenly one. And that's why God's not ashamed to be called their God, it says, because he has prepared a city for them. In other words, they are not going to be disappointed. All the sacrifice that Abraham made, all the sacrifice Moses made, all of the things Joseph endured, all of the imprisonments and beating that Paul endured, he will not be disappointed. Because God has prepared a city for them. And thus you see that although they had a choice to return, a choice to give up, they did. Now remember, this is written to real people. And it's designed to help. It's not just a history lesson. We learn from history as people of faith, an example. But it's designed to encourage these people. Look what they were facing. Look in chapter 10, verse 32. He said, remember the former days. This is chapter 10, verse 32. Remember the former days when after being enlightened you endured a great conflict and suffering, partly by being made a public spectacle. You like to be a public spectacle? People make fun of you. Made a public spectacle. Through reproaches and tribulation. And partly by becoming sheriff with those who were so treated. Oh, you're with those people? Ha ha. Then he says, verse 34, you showed sympathy to the prisoners and accepted joyfully the seizure of your property. Would you like it if somebody come in your house and began to take all your stuff? Why did they do it in the past? Look at the verse. Knowing that you have for yourselves a better possession and an abiding one. That's why you were able to persevere through all of that. You had a faith that there is a city which has its foundation. Don't you have that faith strong? You were able to endure. And that's what he talks about throughout 10:32 all the way through 12. Look at chapter 13, verse 2. Do not neglect to show hospitality to strangers, for by this some have entertained angels without knowing it. Remember the prisoners, as though in prison with them. Some have went to prison. And he's trying to encourage those people. What are you going to tell people like that? They've lost their home. Maybe lost their freedom. Their loved ones have been mistreated. Here's what I'm going to tell them. You can quit if you want to. You have a choice. But there's a fatherland, a homeland for Abel and Noah and Joseph and Moses and Paul. It's there. You'll just keep looking for that city. You'll keep seeking that city. You'll keep desiring that city. It'll be worth all the tears and all the heartaches and all the sacrifices you have. That's what he's telling people. So when times are tough, when times are good, remember the rich man in Luke 12? Oh, I got these all these crops. I got to build barns to store all my crops, and people work for this life and a better job and a great career, and all take care of your house and your farm and your land and your cars. And when you die, you're bankrupt. Gone. That's what God told you, you fool. This night, your soul will be required of you. Now, who alone would you prepare? You won't. Gone. Or we get so busy. You remember the story Jesus told, what we call the parable of the sower, how the seed was sown among the thorns. And the cares of the world, the deceitfulness of riches, the desire for other things enter in, choke the word, and comes unfruitful. You get all those things, but there's no foundation. You have a choice. God didn't make you choose the right course. They had a choice. We have a choice. The question is, what are we doing? So back up to chapter 10. We bring our study here to a close. Verse 36. You have need of endurance. That's what all this section is about. If you were to go through and note the thread work, you'd see the idea of endurance. You'd see the idea of by faith. You'd see the idea of the promise, what lies before. You have need of endurance, so that when you have done the will of God, verse 36, you may receive what was promised. For yet in a little while he who is come will come and will not delay, but my righteous one will live by faith. That's a great, great chapter. Back in the Old Testament, when they were facing war and devastation, said, my righteous one will live by faith. If he shrinks back, my soul has no pleasure in him. We are not of those who shrink back to destruction, but of those, here it is, here's what all this section is about. Who have faith to the preservation of the soul. Real practical application then, real practical application now. Paul had that kind of faith. 2 Corinthians chapter 4. Verse 16. We do not lose heart. He talked about being perplexed, being stricken down, all kind of difficulties. We do not lose heart. We got a word for that called discouraged. That's what the word means, losing heart. We don't get discouraged. But though our outward man is decaying, yet our inner man is being renewed day by day. What's renewing you, Paul? What's giving you strength? Here it is. Momentary light affliction is producing for us an eternal weight of glory beyond all comparison. For we look not at the things which are seen. Did he not see the stripes in his back where he'd been beaten? Did he not see whatever the thorn of the flesh was? Yeah, he had to not but instruction. Where what's behind the nod is not being denied, but what is behind the word but is being emphasized. He said, this is not what we focus on. This is not the most important thing in our lives. We look not at the things which are seen, but at the things which are not seen. For the things which are seen are what? What does the text say? Temporal. They're limited by time. But the things which are not seen, they're eternal. So this is a thread that will help us when things bring tears to our lives and heartaches to our lives. When times are tough or when times are good, they'll help us keep our focus. If we can be like these people, who are looking for the city which has its foundation, whose builder and architect is God. Thank you for your attention.